It was the year 55 when the Crimean War was at its height, and the old convict ships had been largely used as transports in the Black Sea. The government was compelled, therefore, to use smaller and less suitable vessels for sending out their prisoners. The Gloria Scott had been in the Chinese tea trade, but she was an old-fashioned, heavy-bowed, broad-beamed craft, and the new clippers had cut her out. She was a 500-ton boat, and besides her 38 jailbirds, she carried 26 of a crew, 18 soldiers, a captain, 3 mates, a doctor, a chaplain, and 4 warders. Nearly 100 souls were in her, all told, when we set sail from Falmouth. The partitions between the cells of the convicts, instead of being of thick oak, as is usual in convict ships, were quite thin and frail. The man next to me upon the aft side was one whom I had particularly noticed when we were led down the quay. He was a young man, with a clear, hairless face, a long, thin nose, and rather nutcracker jaws. He carried his head very jauntily in the air, had a swaggering style of walking, and was above all else remarkable for his extraordinary height. I don't think any of our heads would have come up to his shoulder, and I am sure that he could not have measured less than 6.5 feet. It was strange among so many sad and weary faces to see one which was full of energy and resolution. The sight of it was to me like a fire in a snowstorm. I was glad then to find that he was my neighbour, and gladder still when, in the dead of the night, I heard a whisper close to my ear, and found that he had managed to cut an opening in the board which separated us. "Hello, chummy," said he. "What's your name, and what are you here for?" I answered him, and asked in turn who I was talking with. "I'm Jack Prendergast," said he, "and by God, you'll learn to bless my name before you've done with me." I remembered hearing of his case, for it was one which had made an immense sensation throughout the country some time before my own arrest. He was a man of good family and of great ability, but of incurably vicious habits, who had, by an ingenious system of fraud, obtained huge sums of money from the leading London merchants. "Ha-ha! You remember my case?" said he proudly. "Very well indeed. Then maybe you remember something queer about it. What was that, then? I had nearly 250,000, hadn't I?" "So it was said. But none was recovered, eh?" "No. Well, where do you suppose the balance is?" he asked. "I have no idea," said I. "Right between my finger and thumb," he cried. "By God, I've got more pants to my name than you've hairs on your head. And if you've money, my son, and know how to handle it and spread it, you can do anything. Now, you don't think it likely that a man who could do anything is going to wear his breeches out sitting in the stinking hold of a rat-gutted, beetle-ridden, mouldy old coffin of a China coaster? No, sir. Such a man will look after himself, and will look after his charms, you may lay to that. You hold on to him, and you may kiss the book that he'll haul you through." That was it.